Our last case this morning is 2021-1374 in the matter of establishing the Solar Generation Fund rider pursuant to Revised Code 3706.46. Are the attorneys present? Sitting for Justice Bruner, we have Judge Mary Eileen Kilbane from the 8th District Court of Appeals. Welcome, Judge. For the appellant, counsel.
Chief Justice O'Connor, honorable justices, may it please the court. My name is Kim Boyko. I'm with the law firm Carpenter, Lips, and Leland. I am counsel for appellant, the Ohio Manufacturers Association Energy Group. I would like to reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Ohio law is clear on the scope of authority granted to the Public Utilities Commission. The commission is a creature of statute and may not exercise authority beyond that conferred by statute. The commission must follow the plain language of a statute, and it is prohibited from adding or removing words from a statute. The commission should also avoid rendering a provision meaningless or inoperative. In the case before you, despite a clear statutory mandate, the commission failed to properly implement a charge on all utility customers' bills, known as the Solar Generation Fund. The commission's ruling directly conflicts with Ohio law and should be reversed by this court. The Solar Generation Fund was originally created by the scandal-ridden House Bill 6. To subsidize qualifying solar generation facilities. It was later amended by House Bill 128. Sections 3706.40 through 3706.65 of the revised code clearly delineate how the fund is created, how qualifying resources earn solar energy credits, how charges are to be collected from Ohio customers that are necessary to fund the fund, and how payments are then made from the fund to the qualifying resources that earned the credits. Despite these clear instructions from the General Assembly, the Commission ignored the text of the statutes as written and implemented a customer charge in a manner that conflicts with the plain reading of House Bill 128 in 5 specific ways. The Commission's errors have resulted in Ohio's electric utilities collecting excessive monthly charges from all customers since November 1st, 2021, and it will continue through December 2027 unless stopped by this court. First, the Commission erred by establishing a fixed annual revenue requirement for the charge at the statutory maximum level in violation of the plain text of 3706.46. Without making any findings as to what is needed to fund the disbursements required under the law. Now let's look at the law. 3706.46C states that each charge authorized by the commission under this section shall be subject to adjustment so as to reconcile actual revenue collected with the revenue needed to meet the revenue requirement under Division A1.
Excuse me, counsel. Your microphone's working. So maybe if we just tone it down a little.
Okay. My apologies, Your Honor. 3706.46A1, despite the utilities, or directs the utilities to collect a charge sufficient to produce a revenue requirement of $20 million annually for total disbursements required under Section 3706.55. So then if we go to 3706.55, it directs that monies from the fund will be dispersed to qualifying solar resources in the amount equivalent to the number of credits earned by the resources. So taken together and read in pari materia, to give meaning to all the words and all the statutory sections, House Bill 128 authorized the commission to establish an annual revenue requirement that is capable of producing up to $20 million for as much as is needed to satisfy the total disbursements required under 3706.55. And instead of this...
If that's what they required, why wouldn't they just say that? That's not what the statute says.
Well, Your Honor, the statute did have the words sufficient and in order to, for the total disbursements required under 370655. What the commission did is it just set a fixed, flat, $20 million annual revenue requirement. That is not what the General Assembly intended, because if it did, the General Assembly would have just said, Commission, why don't you set the revenue requirement up to $20 million, period, every year? It didn't say that. It said what was necessary in order to provide the total disbursements required under the fund. It was not the intent to make customers pay for disbursements that are never given to the solar resources. Also, Your Honor, it's important to note that the Commission improperly quotes a previous repealed version of 490646 in its merit brief, and it did not quote the statutory provision in either of its entries. So it is not clear whether the Commission even based its decisions on the correct statutory
interpretation. And so how is that different? What's the relevant difference there?
Your Honor, the relevant difference is the version of 370646 that was actually enacted by House Bill 128 removes the phrase the following revenue before requirement. And it also importantly includes a phrase, a charge which in the aggregate is sufficient to produce a revenue requirement of $20 million annually for total disbursements required under Section 370655. Without a charge which is in the aggregate sufficient to produce the an amount for total disbursements, then the General Assembly would have just said set the revenue requirement at $20 million a year. It did not. It did not intend to collect the money from customers and keep that money even if the solar generating resources were not operating and earning credits. Secondly, the Commission erred by ordering the assessment of the charge on a per account basis rather than a per customer basis, as specified in the law. Ignoring the explicit language of 3706.46B, the Commission found that per customer somehow means, and I quote, in connection with each billing account established in accordance with the applicable contract or tariff. Not only is this language absent from the statute, the implementation of the charge on a per account basis means that customers with multiple accounts and meters at the same facility will pay the charge multiple times, leading to abrupt and excessive bill impacts, which is also prohibited by the statute. Now, this court has held if the meaning of the statute is unambiguous and definite, it must be applied as written and no further interpretation is necessary. Here, no ambiguity exists in regards to the words per customer monthly charge, because the only reasonable interpretation of that language is that the charge is to be charged once per month per customer. Even if the statute were ambiguous, other considerations demonstrate that the per customer does not mean per account. If we look at the legislative history, the conclusion that the charge should be on a per-customer basis is supported because a prior version of the legislation authorized monthly charges on an account basis. But after much debate at the legislature, references to per-account were removed and replaced with per-customer. While the Commission may have previously implemented other riders on a per-account basis, the consideration cannot supersede the plain language of 370646B.
Well, the Commission's argument is that we ought to defer to their reasonable interpretation. Do you think we should give deference to what the Commission thinks customer means?
No, Your Honor. Appellant's propositions of law center on questions of law, and this court has held that they are subject to this court's complete and independent power of review. Deference should not be given to the Commission as there are no highly specialized issues in this case, and the agency's expertise is not required to apply the words as written. For instance, per customer means per customer. The legislature specifically rejected the per account language in previous versions. This case also is not about a unique rate design issue. The commission didn't even do any analysis. After comments and reply comments, the commission simply fixed the revenue requirement at $20 million. The commission did not look to what was needed to actually fund the disbursements, and it needed to in order to give effect to the entire statutory provision and all of the statutory provisions regarding the Solar Generation Fund. Third, the commission erred by improperly implementing a monthly cost cap on the charge for all non-residential customers eligible to become self-assessing purchasers. 370646B states the per customer monthly charge for industrial customers eligible to become self-assessing purchasers shall not exceed $242. The commission simply struck out the word industrial without any explanation, and it said it should apply to all non-residential customers eligible to become self-assessing purchasers. Again, the commission cannot exercise authority beyond that conferred to it. It cannot simply strike out words and replace it with non-residential.
But didn't the commission have authority to set a rate so it wasn't excessive for those customers? Why couldn't that be saying the same one as the industrial one?
No, Your Honor, there are separate provisions. The provision that I'm speaking to set a $242 cap on a monthly basis for all industrial customers eligible to become self-assessing purchasers. The additional requirement was that for non-residential customers that are not self-assessing purchasers, that those customers make sure that it's not abrupt or excessive bill impact on those customers.
But why couldn't the commission come to decide that setting the amount the same as the industrial ones would make sure it wasn't abrupt? I mean, didn't the statute give the commission that discretion to make a determination of what was appropriate?
No, Your Honor. The statute did not. The statute specifically, unambiguously said that it should apply a monthly cap to all industrial customers eligible to become self-assessing purchasers.
Well, I agree with that, but they did that. So they met that requirement.
They did, and then it goes on to explain that for non-residential customers not eligible to become self-assessing purchasers, that they have to make sure that there are no abrupt or excessive bill impacts.
Well, they did that too by setting the same cap. Why couldn't they do that?
Your Honor, they set the cap for all non-residential customers eligible to become self-assessing purchasers. They're two different. One is for customers not eligible to be self-assessing purchasers, and one is for customers eligible to be self-assessing purchasers. The former is supposed to be for industrial only, and there are many provisions in the Commission's rules that make a distinction between industrial and commercial customers, and the General Assembly set this purposely for the industrial customers, not for other non-industrials.
Okay. And the Commission's can't be the same. You're saying they can't be the 242.
They're not the same, Your Honor. Per the statute, it specifically says that industrial customers should receive the $242 cap.
Right.
And that it because of the statutory interpretation of Expressio Unius, which states that the express mention of a single item implicitly excludes other items from the same class. And the General Assembly's explicit mention of industrial customers eligible to become self-assessing purchasers implies that they intended the stated cost cap to only apply to that specific class of customers.
Is there anything to preclude it from applying to the other group?
The statutory canon that I just referenced, Your Honor, precludes the mentioning of another one. They just ignored the word industrial and applied it to everything, and the commission's not allowed to go beyond what is conferred to it by statute.
So how do they figure out what the other user group should be charged.
You're right, Your Honor. They did no analysis. They should have done an analysis to determine how much of the revenue requirement remained. They should have first done an analysis to determine what is an adequate revenue requirement and how much was needed in order to meet the disbursements of the fund. And once they did that, then they should have determined how much was left over after the residential class got their cap, how much was left over after the industrials got their cap, and then they should have done an analysis to see what the cap should have been for that isolated customer group, and then they should have done another analysis to determine what the non-residential class that wasn't self-assessors, what that cap or what that amount of money should have done. They didn't do any analysis, Your Honor, and they can't just simply strike out a word in the statute that doesn't exist.
Before you sit down, what's the prejudice to your client?
Your Honor, the prejudice is they've been collecting $20 million from our clients, a portion of that from our clients, since November 2021. There's evidence in the record that those...
What's the prejudice? Your claim is not what they're collecting from your clients, it's what they're collecting from other people in your privacy law number three. So what's the prejudice to your clients here?
They are actually collecting this from our clients.
I understand, but that's not your argument is about applying the cap to all non-residential customers, not just your clients.
Your Honor, had they done the proper analysis, the cap for my clients are first of all, our clients are range in many classes of customers. So the right amount to each customer is harmed because they're collecting $242 a month from some customers, not others. So that would create class shifting, and it would also make some customers pay more than what they otherwise should have under a proper analysis.
You can only collect $242, and that customer only pays $242. How is that customer prejudiced? I don't understand the prejudice argument, so you're going to have to help me here.
Sure. The prejudice is twofold. First of all, $20 million should not have been the revenue requirement,
Okay, we're just on your propositional law number three. What's your prejudice? What's the prejudice there?
Sure. They set the cap at $242 for customers that shouldn't have received that high of a cap. So the prejudice is the difference in the cap. There's also a cost-shifting argument.
They should have a lower cap than $240?
Yes, possibly. We don't know because the commission didn't do any analysis. We don't know. And that's why this court should require the commission to apply the law as written and
I'd read your brief, and I didn't see any argument in there that the cap was too high.
The cap was not applied as written, a pure statutory interpretation.
Okay, but that doesn't get you, saying something is not as written still doesn't get you past the prejudice requirement. So you got to show why you're prejudiced as a result.
Right. We're prejudiced because we paid more than we may have otherwise paid under a proper assessment of what the cap should have been.
But you don't know that. You don't know how they came up with 242?
242 was in the statute,
okay,
Your Honor. So we know how they came up with that.
That cannot be changed, right?
Correct. But the other charges to the other classes of customers could be changed and could be different and should be based on the written statute. Your Honor, the bottom line is the commission didn't apply the statute as written in five very specific ways. It has harmed our customers.
So it could be more. So. Right? If you're saying it's not applied correctly to other customers, it could be more than $242 that other customers would pay.
Your Honor, usually the industrial class is the largest class, so typically, no, I would say the assumption would be it would be less, but we don't know because the commission didn't do the full analysis that it should have. It didn't use its expertise in this case.
Thank you.
Apply the law as written.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Blair?
Thank you. May it please the court, I would like to reserve 3 minutes or whatever time is remaining to intervening appellee AEP Ohio, represented by Steve Nurse. The commission lawfully implemented the Solar Generation Fund rider. The commission followed the language in 370646. With this law, the legislature statutorily delegated to the commission the responsibility to develop this solar fund rider. That's what the commission did. The revenue requirement was established by the legislature, and this amount must be collected. OMA wants its customers to pay less of this revenue requirement, thus causing other customers to make up more of that $20 million revenue requirement. OMA challenges the PUCO's order on five different fronts. The first proposition of law is that the Commission erred by establishing an annual revenue requirement that exceeds that required by 370646. There's no ambiguity in the law. It clearly states that electric companies are to collect from all of its customers enough to produce $20 million, specifically references a revenue requirement of $20 million. OMA argues that the word sufficient requires that the Commission independently develop what is sufficient. That is not what the statute says. The statute says sufficient to produce a revenue requirement of $20 million. Longstanding case law says that when their language is clear and unambiguous, the agency or court must apply the statute as written. And furthermore, other case law says that an unambiguous...
But you don't quite say that. But when you get to the second proposition of law, you say that due deference should be given to statutory interpretations by an agency that has accumulated substantial expertise into which the General Assembly has delegated enforcement responsibility. So,
I'm sorry, your question relates to proposition of law number two?
Well, you said since it's clear and ambiguous, we don't, you know, we should just apply the law as it is, which I think is correct. But then when we get to your second proposition, you say we should give due deference to the interpretation of the agency.
Well, and I would also argue that the statute doesn't require deference. I do believe that if that's stated in our brief, that we believe that it is. If we're moving on to the second proposition of law.
I assume that we interpret statutes the same way, regardless of what proposition of law we're on. So.
Yes. Well, I'm just talking about the $20 million revenue requirement. It's straight up. The Commission applied it. There's no deference needed there for the Commission to interpret that $20 million revenue requirement. Now, when we get to proposition of law number two, the appellant argues that the collection of the rider, it should be on a, we based it on per account, and that means per customer. The plain meaning of customer for utility purposes is customer account.
The plain meaning of customer is not customer, it's account.
It's the same thing when you're speaking of utility accounts. If you look at the definition of customer, which is contained in the OAC at 4901.1-10-1, it says a customer is any person who has an agreement by contract or tariff to take electric service.
But does that interpretation doesn't apply to the statute, does it? That definition provision doesn't apply to the statute, does it?
The statute uses the word customer.
Right.
The Commission interprets customer to mean account, which is defined in the OAC.
And you want us to defer to that interpretation by the Commission?
Yes, and I do believe that it is provided in the Ohio Administrative Code because the relationship of the tariff, if you have a Home Depot, they take according to the tariff. The Home Depot in Canal Winchester is a separate account than the Home Depot in Dayton. Those are two separate customers.
What about the fact that the legislature apparently had a statute that would have done it by account and decided now we want customer?
I don't believe that there's any difference to the Commission because customer and account mean the same thing.
Well, there probably was, seems there must have been to the legislature, right? Or it would have just gone with the accounts.
It was per customer throughout HB 6 and 128. It has been that way. And the Commission interprets customer. I'm sorry.
Example of the two Home Depots?
My example of the two Home Depots? They are separate customers. The Home Depot, I don't know what I...
Separate accounts.
Yes, and that's the way that they're billed. They're two separate customers. And historically, all riders are collected in connection with each billing account established in according to the tariff, and the tariff treats each account as a separate customer. There is no legislative language in the bill that prohibits this definition of customer, nor does the appellant provide any different definition in case law, in statute, in precedent. There's nothing in the briefs that defines customer differently. The commission followed its precedent in determining that customer and account mean the same thing. All riders are collected per customer, which means per account. The commission reasonably applied the statute, and they point to no case law to make another decision. In proposition of law number 3, the appellant claims that the customer unreasonably applied the $242 monthly cap to any non-residential customer that is eligible to self-assess instead of just the industrial customers that are eligible to self-assess. There is no definition of industrial customer in the statute, in the revised code, administrative code, nor did appellant provide any to distinguish the industrial customer from the other customer. The law provides caps for those large users that are eligible to self-assess, which means they take over 45 million kilowatt hours annually. There is no prohibition in the law against applying the cap to those non-residential customers who are eligible to self-assess.
I'm sorry, I want to go back to something you said, because you said that you relied on the definition of customer in the OHI Advisor Administrative Code. And so I just pulled that up, and that definition is any person who has an agreement by contract and or tariff with an electric utility to receive service. Now, that definition of customer would seem that it means a person, not account, but, you know, any business that has an agreement. There's nothing in those words that get to this account definition that you propose.
Well, it's tying it to a tariff, and that's how customers or accounts get their services, according to the tariff.
So agreement by contract and or tariff.
Right, and the tariff obligates that location to take according to the tariff. So it's the tariff that defines the location as the customer in the account. That's what I'm saying there, because that it's tied to tariff. Moving on to the $242 cap, there is no definition of industrial customer. The intent is to cap these large users that are eligible to self-assess. They use a large amount of electricity at $242. There's no prohibition in the law against using that cap for non-residential customers who are eligible to self-assess. What the appellant would like to do is deny these other large users the protection of a cap. The solar law did not include language prohibiting the commission from implementing the cap. In fact, 3706-4682 directed that the Public Utilities Commission shall determine the method by which the revenue is allocated or assigned for billing and collection. And that's what the commission did with a $242 cap. The General Assembly did not intend to deny these customers a cap. The commission's decision to apply the $242 monthly cap to non-residential customers who are eligible to self-assess is lawful. In the fourth proposition of law, the appellant argues that the commercial activities tax, CAT, is included. This is incorrect. Upon looking at the July 14th and 2021 entry and the entry on rehearing, the commission specifically found that the solar generation fund rider would be established without consideration of any CAT adjustment. There is no CAT. There is no issue there. The commission did what OMA is seeking regarding the CAT. In the fifth and final proposition of law, the appellant states that the commission erred by not mandating that the electric companies include refund language in their tariffs. This is incorrect. The commission's original entry, the July 14, 2021 entry, said that the statute explicitly provides for reconciliations and refunds. The commission ordered the reconciliation and refund. Nothing more is required. In fact, each electric utility, if you look at their tariffs, has refund language. An example can be found in First Energy's tariff. The changes contained in the rider shall be updated and reconciled. This rider is subject to reconciliation. The cases cited by appellant, the First Energy cases, are the statute that established them did not have refund language in it. 3706-46 does have specific refund language in it. The statute ordered reconciliation and refunds. The commission ordered it. The utilities put it in their tariffs. The commission lawfully implemented the Solar Generation Fund rider. The commission followed the language of 3706. The five appealed errors are without merit. The commission respectfully requests that this court affirm its decision.
Mr. Nurse?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'll just briefly address some of the issues that I think garnered most of the questions. So on the $20 million revenue requirement, I think the problem with the appellant's view is that it ignores the directive for $20 million. It also asked the commission to speculate in advance of the OAQDA discharging their statutory obligation, which was to determine who was eligible, how many credits they get, and that's based on actual generation production. So what the appellant is asking was up front, the commission was supposed to project how much sunshine was going to occur in the following year and estimate how many credits would be given. That violates the statute. The statute is a collect and then disperse structure. It directs the $20 million, and then it says if the fund is short for the credits that are due to the generators, the OAQDA is supposed to prorate. So that in the first year, you absolutely had to get $20 million collected, or else you'd be violating the statute. It's yet to be determined. We're still in the first year. So the commission, in the future years, they may collect less than $20 million based on, even if you accept appellant's view, that the sufficiency means that you should adjust that, which we don't agree with, by the way, as we briefed. But, you know, appellant's using the word sufficient in a strained way. If you say, is your bank account balance sufficient to cover the checks you just wrote, or is it insufficient funds, that means is it enough or more than enough. It doesn't mean that's a cap, and that's how they're using it. So we submit the commission, and only the first year is the only thing it's a concrete dispute here. They had to do $20 million.
Counsel, can you speak to the commercial activity tax?
Certainly. That's really a red herring, Your Honor. At the time this was originally set up, I guess there was some uncertainty about who would pay. Utilities don't pay the CAT tax. We said that in our comments below. The customers wouldn't pay it here. The only possible issue would be whether the generators pay it, but that's beyond the scope of this case.
Was it clear what the commission's findings were with regard to the CAT?
Yeah, the CAT tax was not included in the revenue requirement. The $20 million, we're just a collection agency for OAQDA. We collected the $20 million, remit it to the fund, and then the OAQDA disperses the funds. And if I could briefly address just the customer issue, the point there is that the commission's role under this statute, the General Assembly delegated to the commission to establish the level and the structure of the charge, and they had to implement the rate caps, and they did so. They checked all those boxes, but the General Assembly actually gave the commission a duty, a charge that they had to set the structure of the charge, so they're billing it by account, which is same thing as a customer. The Home Depot customer in Lancaster is not the same as the Home Depot in Columbus. They're different customers. And the General Assembly gave the commission the obligation to ensure that the level and the design of the charge avoid abrupt rate impacts. That's what they did when they decided to mirror the $242 cap for the other customers. That was perfectly permissible, and it was a way for the commission to discharge its obligation the General Assembly told them to do. And frankly, if the appellant wins, some of their members are going to end up paying more under their theory. It's not going to change their $242 cap customers. That's statutory. It's not going to change the residential 10 cents. It could only possibly change the other customers, of which there are many OMA members.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to point out that on page 12 of our reply brief, we did look at the definition of customer. Person does mean offices and facilities. If you look at the definition of customer premise, it also considers offices and facilities. The problem with the Home Depot argument, as Cooper Tire testified in front of the General Assembly, that the same facility could have multiple meters and multiple accounts. A small business can have 4 meters, and it's because of that that we believe the General Assembly changed the language from per account to per customer to help those customers. We're not asking the commission to do some kind of forward-looking forecast. What council hasn't told you is that these are collected on an after-fact basis and dispersed on an after-fact basis. In November, we're in year two, actually. In November, the commission could have looked at April 2021 and determined how much had been generated, how many credits were issued, and how much money would need to come out of that fund. They did not do that. Instead, they fixed a $20 million revenue requirement and said this is what it's going to be every single year without looking at anything else. All they had to do was ask the Air Quality Development Authority. They didn't have to do their own analysis. How many have you certified? How many credits have you issued to date? They didn't do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, be called.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.